Come back again next week.
You're listening and join to CJSF 90.1 FM, SF Youth Community Radio Station, broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
Now, before we dive into a very Canadian pride-filled episode of Can Queer, Canada's queer media, I have a question for you, Sebastian.
Honeydew, that's my answer.
Have you booked your flight for the 19th of June? To London, because I just assume that you're going to go to the first official Moomin Pride event in the UK.
I have not heard of this. Oh my God, I wish I could go. Now this is something that Canadians outside of Quebec largely may not know about. And my excitement is a thing. Okay, so. Moomins are a Finnish children's story. It's kind of the equivalent of like Winnie the Pooh or Disney. It's like a children's story. But the thing is that there's a Moomin land on every continent except for North America. So it's like Disneyland, like a Moomin themed theme park. And there's Moomin movies and Moomin TV shows. And there's a Moomin comic book, Moomin books, Moomin everything. There's even Moomin video games, but just it's like if you go to somewhere like pretty relevant, like you go to Switzerland and they're like, who's Mickey Mouse? What are you talking about? That's how the rest of the world feels when they come to North America and people are like, I don't know who Snufkin is. What are you talking about? So yeah, no, the Moomins are a very big deal. And Quebec, for some reason, well, I'm not going to say for some reason, because Quebec has a very big, like, bande dessinée culture. So, like, Asterix and Lucky Luke and the Smurfs, they have this, like, whole tradition with graphic novels. And the Moomins just kind of slotted right into that. But, yeah, no, the Moomins are a very big deal. I'm getting so excited about the Moomins, and I don't need to get excited about the Moomins. So what is relevant about Moomin Pride?
So the Finnish illustrator Tove Jansson, who did the Moomins, they were illustrated from 1945 up until the late 1950s.
She wrote the books, her brother illustrated.
Okay, so she wrote the book, brother illustrated. She is rumored to, you know, she apparently was not shy about revealing her relationships with other women's. Mm-hmm. The Moomins themselves are not explicitly queer, but a lot of the storytelling resonates strongly with queer culture. So it's become a bit of
a lot of outsiders. They're all outsiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the Common Press, which is a queer intersectional bookshop and event space in London, the Common Press reminds me a lot about the Glade bookstore. And we've seen a couple of other sort of queer bookstores go this direction of being more of an event space as well as a book selling space.
Yeah.
Anyway, they are supposedly hosting, well, they are hosting the first in the UK Moomin Pride event. So I assumed you already knew and had your bags packed ready to go.
I just collect the books. That's I didn't know it was that big a deal. I haven't even played the video games. I probably should wait until a Steam sale and just play all the Moomin games. I don't even know if they're good or not, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Moomins, obviously. I have a Moomin on my keychain.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's start off with some great news. Folks listening out in Manitoba may have been celebrating Winnipeg's Pride just this past weekend. Happy Pride to everybody in Winnipeg and in the many other towns and cities across Canada that are already celebrating Pride events. Yeah, Winnipeg, hundreds got up to march. As part of the trans march in Winnipeg, on a significantly larger number also marching than in the Pride Parade, which I believe was on Sunday. So significant representation as far as we have heard, although we are keeping our ears peeled. At time of recording, it is Sunday, so some of the news may not have hit us yet. But as far as we are aware, the event has gone off without incident. So very excited about that and glad to see some folks really celebrating and having a great time. Lou has also kicked off their, Waterloo, Ontario, has also kicked off their Pride Month ceremonies at the Waterloo Square. I believe they've painted a new crosswalk. And there's all banners up everywhere along the Waterloo Park promenade. I don't know how familiar you are with Waterloo, Ontario.
I've been to KW a couple times, but it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure if you go there again anytime soon, it's going to be a lot more colorful as the area moves into some celebrations. Now, somebody who has been without a rainbow for a little longer than expected is Sudbury. Now, for those who may not recall, in 2023, so last year, the Pride Parades in Sudbury, Ontario, was effectively cancelled over protests over the participation of the police in the parade. Now, Fierté Sudbury Pride have really work together, and they're working together with the they're collaborating, I should say, with the Greater Sudbury Police Service, and Pride will be happening this year in Sudbury. My understanding is that the Greater Sudbury Police Service will be limited to what, frankly, you would expect them to, you know, traffic controlling measures around the parade, you know, big six safety.
EMS services.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, it apparently was, it's been quite a challenge to make this happen. You know, there was definitely a pushback against police participation at all, and balancing that, you know, having police in the parade, having police policing the parade, and then obviously, you know, having the parade happen at all. But yeah, obviously last year it did not happen. We are excited to see that it will be happening this year. Fantastic news for Sudbury. But this is a debate we see happening all of the time, eh?
Yeah, it's been happening for years. I mean, it's an interesting balancing point, because it's a common attitude in the community that there's a lot of people who want there to be sort of an amenable relationship between the community and the police. But they also recognize that there is a history that needs to be accounted for. But also, we can't fix things and move forward until we bury the hatchet. And you can't ignore the past, but you also can't dwell in it. And some communities have done a very good job of creating positive community police relations. Others haven't really tried so hard. And having police boots on the ground, keeping the community safe at sort of an arm's reach, where like you can just go up to an officer and talk to them, I think that is definitely a good first step. Marching in the parade, I don't know, that's sort of a nice symbol to show their acceptance. But in the end, having the police on the scene, seeing the community, dealing with the community, helping people who need help, and having the community see the police there and not causing harm, I think in the end, having the police on the scene, I mean, it's not really a choice, just like because of like legislature, you can't have something like a community fair with the roads closed off without a police presence. You just can't. So, I mean, they're going to be there one way or the other, but having them there can be a positive thing, because every time the police are present and nothing bad happens, that is a little stitch in St. Peter's hem, I guess you could say. Like it's a positive moment, or at least the lack of a negative one, that can go a long way towards mending bridges.
Well, I think a big part of the concern is this just pinkwashing, essentially? Is having some police service cars, you know, in a rainbow wrap and some rainbow pins, just being a token gesture? There's definitely a critique from some folks in Sudbury that The critique is that the Sudbury police are simply not listening, not taking the threats and risks to the community seriously. Now, the Greater Sudbury Police Service, politely disagree. They do believe that this is effort to build that connection. They have indicated that the people that they are hoping that will be marching in the delegation for the Greater Sudbury Police will be openly LGBTQ members of the service and their allies. So I think that's pretty key. We both
It
you
is, but
look,
the critique about the wraps, like having, a special pride jersey or wrapping a police car or having pins on their lapels. I mean, that is nice, but I do think the most positive thing that could happen is the police show up, they protect the parade and the community fair, they get no complaints, and they get a few compliments. That really is the best thing they could do to actually show that they are there, at least doing the minimal job, which is their job, protecting the community. And I think it doesn't sound like a big deal, but it kind of is. The fact that they're just there, they get no complaints, and they get a few compliments, and they just do their job, and nothing goes wrong. That is in the grand arc of history, that is actually a pretty big deal. And the wraps and the pins and the jerseys aside, just showing up and doing their job with no complaints. I'd love to see more of that. That really is the foundation of how to rebuild trust with the community.
Well, I think there's definitely a push to have pride happen. So Pierre de Sudbury Pride joined with the Sudbury Queer Coalition, and this is a sort of a loose organization of LGBTQ organizations in Sudbury. And what's really interesting is that collectively said they've kind of agreed that yeah, we do need a pride. We need to be able to demonstrate to ourselves, to each other, and more importantly, maybe to the public, that Sudbury is a place that is welcoming. Sudbury is a place where hate crimes against the community are condemned. Where the safety of the community is being taken seriously. So, all in all, I think everyone seems to be pretty excited that this will be the case moving forward. Now, what will happen during Sudbury Pride? Who knows?
Who
Who knows?
knows?
But at least now there will be one happening for a thing to happen within, as it was. That was a very complicated sentence there, but you get what I mean. Absolutely. Now, sticking to Pride, I do want to make note. We had mentioned the will they, won't they relationship, the on and off, hot and cold relationship between small towns and pride flags, particularly around rural Ontario. We had mentioned that Norwich, Ontario had banned pride and other flags from its various property and municipalities. Now, they actually changed their mind on that in January after the pretty significant backlash that they received for it. It wasn't just the pride flag that got snared up in this ban. It was every other flag supporting various communities of people who live in Norwich. But things have really, really developed there now. This past weekend, I believe that there were nine rainbow flags raised throughout the county of Oxford County, which includes Norwich. So Woodstock, Ontario, Blandford, Blenheim, East Zora, Tavistock, Zora, Ingersoll, Southwest Oxford, Tillsburg, Norwich, and of course Oxford County itself. The pride was raised across the board from town to town, and the entire area has unilaterally had their flags raised. But it's not all just happy go lucky pride go times. Have you heard about the story out of Sault Ste. Marie?
To Saint Marie? No. What happened to or the Sioux? What happened there?
So about 60 kilometers east of Sault Ste. Marie in Desborough, which is in Ontario, the East Algoma Ontario Provincial Police are investigating a flag burning at the Central Algoma Secondary School on May the 9th. So working on it. But it has, they've now essentially, they've retrieved a video of the flag burning. I think we may have mentioned the flag burning at the start of May when it happened. But an individual, they believe it to be a man in a dark hoodie, pulled down the flag from the school property, ripped it off the pole and set it on fire before running away. Of course, he didn't have the balls to stand there and be seen, but they set the flag on fire and ran away. So there's still room for improvement in terms of how we engage with the community. Now, before we jump into our next song, I wanted to talk about an article I read on pinknews.co.uk. This is a fantastic site. They focus a lot on British news. But they were talking about the use of the term trade or trade of the season across RuPaul's Drag Race. Are you familiar with the term, Sebastian?
Trade? It actually, the term trade features pretty prevalently in a couple John Waters movies. It's a little bit more historical. It's not really a term that's used as much now. It's not in the living language of the community, but it is sort of ossified in drag queen slang for sure. And trade, loosely defined, is straight men who don't think it's gay to accept certain kinds of gay sex from other men so long as they're in certain positions. So trade is basically sex with straight men who for some reason don't see it as being gay.
Yeah, so within ballroom culture in North America specifically, trade became sort of morphed into someone who's particularly masculine, has a bit of a rough edge to them, where you know you're questioning, you know, the if they tell Elizabeth to get into the car, you know, you understand where I'm going with that one. But what it does seem to miss is a lot of the European history behind the term trade, and it gets dated back all the way to the 1930s in London, and Cockney slang in particular. And what they've pinned it back to, and this I think has been consistent in queer culture for decades, and we're talking 1930s, it was almost 100 years ago at this point, it was 90 plus years, but essentially affluent, wealthy gay men with means may have hired the company of certain individuals who were doing trade work. So they could be paving, they could be bricklayers, they could be, you know, I don't know, you know, the trades that one might expect in the 1930s.
The coal man.
The coal man, the guy that comes and puts the lamps on, you know, all of these wondrous jobs. And it was a way of, it was paid company for typically affluent homosexual men, and then paying the trade workers. The trade workers were typically straight, not that sexual identity was particularly codified back in the 1930s. But that's sort of where it came from. And then rough trade evolved out of that to reflect these adult interactions between gay men and working straight men, where maybe the interaction was a bit more rough around the edges, a bit more handsy, a little bit less soft and gentle. get my drift there. So rough trade could refer to somebody who looks like they might be a little unkind. Or a little ungentle. Ungentle, is that a word?
Yeah, ungentle. I always accept that. He was also associated with sort of a come and go approach to,
And there was certainly a risk to it. It bled into the colloquialism of, you know, if someone's looking a bit roughed up, they said, oh, I met with a rough trade yesterday, and it kind of lived on. But it does have a Canadian connection.
Okay.
And that is with Carol Pope and the band Rough Trade. And of course, Carol Pope is a fantastic Canadian lesbian lady, who has one of my favorite songs, "Lesbians in the Forest."
Oh,
But we're not
yes.
going to play "Lesbians in the Forest." We're going to play "High School Confidential." Now, this had international success, but it uses the phrase "rough trade." So, this little time capsule of queer culture, we hear it in RuPaul's Drag Race with trades. We hear it from Carol Pope with Rough Trade, and it goes all the way back to the 1930s. Anyway, this is Rough Trade with High School Confidential, and we will be back just after this.
She's a cool.
Welcome back to Canada. No, wait, well, welcome back to Canada if you're just here in general. But
welcome back to Canada.
exactly. Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
This is episode 360 something of this iteration of the show. And I have said welcome back to Can Queer probably over 1,000 times. And yet I still got it wrong. I don't even know how that
Yeah, you've flubbed it at least a couple dozen times as well.
Probably a good 100 times I would estimate.
Well, no one's perfect.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to be perfect, but maybe
Not even Madonna.
not even Madonna. We will be getting into how perfect Madonna is later in the show. But first, Glanday Bookstore in Toronto's Gay Village. They've been there since, I want to say, the 1970s. They have been asking for support to avoid an immediate crisis. So the situation that they find themselves in just like droves of small local businesses from coast to coast to coast.
Yes.
They really struggled with the closures from the pandemic, the end of the subsidies that sort of enabled them to stagger through that, and the shifting way that folks shop and engage with businesses since the pandemic happened. But they've now found themselves that they've been, according to their own website, they've been going into debt almost every month for the last 2 years. So we're 2024, so that would have been 2022 onwards, roughly when a lot of the subsidies and supports ended. Mm-hmm. And they now owe their landlord over $100,000 in back rent payments.
Mm-hmm.
And this is... bookstore may well find itself out on the street with little piles of books around it by the end of the month if they are not able to come up with $100,000 pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into how that's going, why don't you let us know what is the significance of the Glad Day bookstore?
Well, I mean, Glad Day bookstores in the 70s, 80s, and actually I'd even say up to the late 90s, were very much a cornerstone of the queer community. It was one of the few places that offered, let's say, merch, I guess you could say. A lot of the adult toy stores were very much back alley deals, or they were regulated out of existence in the 70s and 80s. So if you wanted to get any kind of contact with the community, other than drinking, basically, because you had the bar scene, obviously, and then I guess you also had bathhouses and saunas, and there really wasn't that much of a third option, and the bookstores really were a place for that. A lot of the books in the queer bookstores in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, a lot of it was just stuff like, what, I don't know, like Immanuel Kant and Moby Dick and The Old Man and the Sea. Like it was a regular bookstore. It was just that a large portion of the books were also authored by queer authors, or it was nonfiction on queer issues, or it was of queer interest, or there was a lot of magazines, lino-printed zines, local community zines as well, a lot of public announcements. If there's going to be like a concert or a bake sale or something, they would be announced to these bookstores. There was sort of a community hub for everything to do with the community other than the party scene. All the other stuff sort of went through here. A lot of them also had sort of a curtained off section in the back where you could get pornography. So there was that sort of association between pornography and the community through the bookstores, but not all of them had them. I don't know if Glad Day actually had a pornography section in the back. A few of them, I remember the one in Hamilton was kind of known for that, and they would get raided every so often. And there was Little Sisters in Vancouver, which is one of the big Canadian queer bookstores, and it frequently got raided as well. So there is that sort of history of it as a community central point, and the fact that they were regularly raided for indecent material, even though not all of them had indecent material, and even those that did always kept them in a separate section in the back that was monitored so that if you're underage, you weren't allowed in there. So there is that sort of just as a cultural hub before the internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, Glad Day, you know, being at the heart of, really, it's right in the village in Toronto. It has a huge cultural significance to the queer culture in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been trying their best. In 2020, they stopped having a general manager. In 2022, they stopped having a bookstore manager. They've cut their hours. They've reduced the size of the book collection. They've cut back on events. They've reduced their social media presence. They have been cutting left, right, and center. But they've particularly noted that in the last 9 months, people are just not spending in the way that they had. So they want to raise about $100,000 to avoid eviction, first and foremost. Like, that seems to be the big first step. And they have. So I think it was within a day almost that they were effectively able to raise $112,000. The community in Toronto, I think there was only a couple of thousand people in that have fundraised, that have donated so far, that have raised the 112. Sorry, it wasn't a few hours, it was a couple of days, that have now stepped up. 2,000 plus people have already donated. I do not believe that the Glad Day Bookstore is a non-profit or a charity. So this would be supporting a private enterprise, but one that has certainly